The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I was reading this tragic story about a light plane that crashed in western Ukraine. Four people were killed, apparently three of them Jerusalem yeshiva students, two from Munsey in New Jersey, one from London. The three of them apparently were all studying at the Mir Yeshiva in Jerusalem. The circumstances of this plane crash are really quite unknown. Apparently, it was a light-powered sports plane that crashed into a private house in western Ukraine. It seems like it was some sort of a tourist trip of some sort. I don't really know.
It seems so. You know, I saw a footage of another group, also of young yeshiva students, not this particular one. And it shows you the pilot filming as he's doing all of these acrobatics. But he's got one hand holding up the camera, the phone, and the other one flipping this plane. So there's now concern.
Another one on the phone to his mother.
Basically. So there is concern that this was... this was not problematic,
good.
Not terrible
good.
Either
but
way.
On a more positive note, the Iranian defector, Saeed Mollahi, we may remember he was the guy, the judoka, who was instructed to throw a competition in order not to come up against Israel Sagi Mukhi, and that gave him the push to defect from Iran, went to Germany. These days, he is representing Mongolia in judo, won a silver medal at the Olympic Games. And amongst other things, when he won the medal, dedicated to Israel, he has been here, he's visited, he even participated in a judo contest here last year. And he said in his speech, Toda, in Hebrew, recognizing the support that he's had not only from Israeli judoka, from Sagi Mukhi in particular, but also from the Israeli public who have really supported him. So well done, Saeed Mollahi, silver medalist at the Olympic Games, and we're very excited with that.
That is just such an amazing story, this, because it really is it's a triumph in many ways.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and it shows that when you compete honestly in sport rather than politically, you can really go, you know, you can reach great heights.
Well, and you can do what sport is actually meant to do, which is to bring people together, not rip them apart. But anyway, the rate of increase in the number of new COVID-19 diagnoses continues to be a great concern to health officials in Israel. Where to from here?
Well, now the health officials are saying that they're concerned about the impact on hospitals. Obviously, an increase in the number of patients who are currently in hospital, people who are more seriously ill. One of the common themes across this current wave, and I think we are in the fourth wave, there can be little doubt, more than 2,000 new diagnoses over the last 2 days each day. The test positivity rate is still relatively low, but the increase in the number of people who are currently diagnosed as having corona showing a worrying increase. The health officials are saying the hospitals are coping. There's nothing to be concerned about. And yet there is just this little expectation, concern that, you know, the number of people who will be hospitalized over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks may put a little strain on the medical system. And so there are some people who are saying that there is really now a 2 week window within which the Israeli authorities really need to act. They need to take some steps in order to somehow stem the flow. Still lots of discussion about the possibility of a third vaccination, a booster jab. I saw a recent study which suggested that people who got the third vaccine, just of the existing vaccine that is currently available, could boost their antibody levels by between 5 and 11 times. That's something that I think Pfizer put out, suggesting that it could be quite effective to just to have the third vaccine as it is. I think there are people who are holding out some hope that a third vaccine will come in the form of a slightly modified one, which can address also the latest variants, particularly the Delta variant. I don't know that we can really be very positive about that, because there doesn't seem to be anything on the horizon and nothing formally to authorize the administration of a third vaccine. But it seems that we will inevitably go into a process of giving people a third vaccine. There is now talk about people of 65 years and over who should be administered the vaccination. One of the common themes across the whole system is that even though we are moving into a fourth wave, even though we are concerned about the number of new diagnoses, even though there is an increase in the number of people who are being hospitalized and even people going onto ventilation, that across the board, it is clear that those people who have been vaccinated previously are still in a much better position than those people who have not been vaccinated, like for like. So those people who have been hospitalized, more of them are recovering. You're more likely to get through it pretty quickly if you have been vaccinated, as opposed to those people who have not been. So even though the vaccine, the efficacy of the vaccine clearly goes down over time, the longer the time since you had your vaccination, the more likely you are potentially to be infected by corona, by some of the new variants, the more likely you are potentially to be ill. But the point is that you will still be better off having been vaccinated than not being vaccinated at any point in time. So, you know, that is certainly the common theme. But it seems as if the Israeli authorities are going to be forced to do something a lot more proactive within the coming weeks. Of course, concern about the upcoming Chagim, Rosh Hashanah, is now something like 5 weeks away. And so there is concern about the extent to which people might be coming together, celebrating together, and potentially infecting each other. So that's also one of the things that's on the horizon. There were some threats of a lockdown over Rosh Hashanah. Other people saying under no circumstances. It's very, very difficult to gauge exactly what the intentions will be. But I think over the next 2 to 3 weeks, we will certainly see some proactive decisions coming out of the coronavirus cabinet and the government in general.
It's just crazy. It's just really, really crazy.
It's not over.
It's not over. It's very, very sad. Also not over is the Ben and Jerry story. Gosh, and I wish it was. I just wish it was. Yeah. The founders of the company have now come out in support of the ban of sales of the ice cream in what they've called the occupied territories. Is the story still going to run for a while?
It's going to run, because I just wanted to take a step back and just, you know, have a look at the various positions that are being held by various parties. First of all, we have Unilever, the company that has bought out Ben & Jerry's, owns Ben & Jerry's. Unilever are concerned about the effect on their business in general, because their activities in Israel go way beyond Ben & Jerry's. They've got a lot vested in Israel. They've got huge numbers of people who are employed here. They've got a lot of business that they do in Israel. So they've been quite cautious, on the one hand, to support the ban, but on the other hand, to say they are very committed to Israel and that they do oppose BDS. Now, that doesn't stack up for me, because BDS, in its at the outset, was an organization that was designed to boycott goods, services that were produced in Judea and Samaria, in the so-called, what Ben & Jerry's have called, occupied Palestinian territories. That was where BDS started out life. And so you can't say, well, we support the ban of sales in the so-called occupied Palestinian territories, while also saying, but we don't support BDS, because that's really what BDS was about. What is true is that BDS has become a lot more. BDS has become a ban on things connected to Israel in general, because people saw it as an opportunity and they expanded it beyond. But I don't think that Unilever can really turn around and say, while we do support the ban of sale of ice cream in, you know, what they've termed the occupied Palestinian territories, we don't support BDS. I think those two are almost one and the same. They are connected to each other. The the senior people within Ben and Jerry's themselves, and in particular the chairman, the lady who's the chairman of the board of Ben and Jerry's, have also come out saying, you know, we don't necessarily wish to boycott Israel. Although there was an interesting statement which went against that, and there was a statement that came out from the board of Ben and Jerry's that said the idea of boycotting only the occupied Palestinian territories was Unilever's idea. Our idea was to boycott Israel as a whole.
Wow. So
we're blaming Unilever for having kind of watered it down a little bit. So that was a statement that was made at one point by members of the board of Ben & Jerry's. But there's certainly some issues. There has been a history of, BDS support coming out from the chairman of Ben & Jerry's. She can't really escape from that because it's there in black and white for everybody to see, even though she's now trying to backtrack a little bit. But the most concerning or the most disappointing thing for me personally was that Ben and Jerry themselves, Bennett Cohen and Jerry Greenfield, who were the founders of Ben and Jerry's, have come out saying that they support this action taken by the company, even though they no longer are involved.
We're not surprised, though. You know, this is very much true to their brand, Ben and Jerry themselves.
Yeah. I'm not saying that. I don't know. They came out saying that they are supporters of the State of Israel and they are proud Jews, but they support the company's decision to boycott Israeli settlements in the West Bank. That was apparently a piece written in the New York Times yesterday. They say that it's possible to support Israel and oppose some of its policies, just as we've opposed policies of the U.S. government. Now, that statement I do support. I think that people who are supporters of Israel don't necessarily have to love everything that Israel does. I get that. Mm. Or love the government or the people who are running the country. All of that I absolutely understand. But I think that when you talk about boycotting economically in this way, there is a certain kind of action that's being taken. You know, it's different to say, I don't support the actions of the government. I don't support what they're doing. I don't like, something or other decision that has been taken by the government. I think it's an entirely different thing to actually take economic action, to actually boycott, Israel in a certain way or boycott the so-called Palestinian, occupied Palestinian territories that they like to talk about. So, for me, that was a little disappointing. And of course, they've said that they do not endorse BDS again. I call them out on that because I think the moment you take this economic action, you are in effect supporting BDS. That's what you're doing. Now, you might say, well, I don't support BDS because BDS is anti-Israel in general. And I'm only supporting this particular stance. I only don't want them to sell in Tel Aviv or I don't want them to sell in Haifa. I mean, there's an economic action being taken, which is effectively in support of what BDS is all about. So I don't buy into that, not from Ben and Jerry themselves and not from Unilever and certainly not from the offices of Ben and Jerry's, the company. This is definitely going to roll. This is by far not done. And of course, from the Israeli government's point of view, the last thing that they would want now is for this action to somehow have a knock-on effect in other areas that
I would imagine that that's why I've been thinking about this a lot. Why is this such a big story? Maybe because, you know, we don't get Ben and Jerry's here and I'm not particularly an ice cream person, but you know, I keep wondering why is this such a massive story? And I think what you're saying now is why it's a massive story is because it could be almost the story of Amalek, where why it's so bad is it's the first company or the first person or the first nation to do this, and then it paves the way for others.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's the concern, which is why, for example, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has personally become involved. We've had Foreign Minister Yair Lapid having statements, and I think that in general, the Israeli, the senior government ministers are concerned that this may well legitimize other well-known companies and give them somehow an opening and a justification for them to take a similar action. I really hope that that won't be the case. And of course, they hope so too, which is why they become so personally involved. But that certainly is an area of concern.
It really is. I'd love your thoughts on it, Ben and Jerry's 34519 or 0618951019. Madeleine says, if Ben and Jerry's paid for it, they could never have hoped for more publicity. I've been thinking That's about true. That as well. They really are everywhere, but I just don't know. I don't know what that, what it really means, in terms of if it's good publicity or bad. It used to be that, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. I don't think that really does apply anymore. And an unlikely Israeli hero at the Tokyo Olympics?
Yes. Yeah, so our newest, unlikely hero coming out of the Tokyo Olympics, of course, besides Said Molay that we spoke before, is a young man called Itai Shani. And he is an archer. He is participating in the archery event, which is, again, not something that you necessarily associate with Israel or with Jewish athletes in general. But here we go. Itai Shani, who actually qualified only 60th out of the 64 competitors in his particular competition, has now come up against some of the favorites within the competition. It's a kind of a one-on-one competition event, the way that it's conducted. And he has already knocked out and defeated two of the favorites, one from Japan and one from India. So he's now into the round of 16 already, which will take place on Saturday morning. And there is hope that he might even be able to somehow get his way into the medal position. So that's a very, very unusual, unlikely, and quite an exciting development in the Israeli Olympic field. And I've just watched a few moments ago the 12th round of the windsurfing, and the Israeli competitor actually won that 12th leg. And I'm not quite sure exactly where that puts her in, what position that makes her in terms of the general competition. But obviously, having won that particular leg, it does her a lot of favors in terms of moving her up the ranks. So we're going to be watching the rest of the windsurfing competition, the remaining legs, to see how she does. So more Israeli athletes are due to be participating in the Olympic Games over the next few days, and we'll be watching quite eagerly to see if we might be able yet to secure a second or even more medals after, of course, the wonderful win in the taekwondo that we discussed earlier this week.
And that's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always, wishing you a fantastic weekend and a Shabbat Shalom.